Welcome back. Before diving into evidence 4, let's examine the arguments against God's existence. You probably know this, but by definition, an atheist is someone who says there is no God. An agnostic is a person who believes that nothing is known or can be known of the existence of God. Where an atheist would say there is no God, an agnostic would say, I don't know if there's a God, and it can't be proven either way. Agnostics actually make a good point. There is no absolute proof that there is a God, just as there isn't what you'd typically call proof or evidence that there isn't. There's a reason for that that we'll explore later. Now, that may seem discouraging when you're searching for your own answer, but when we're done exploring arguments on both sides, I believe that you'll see that when you compare the lack of evidence discounting God against the evidence that demonstrates that there is a higher being, the conclusion is persuasive. From there, you'll discover that there are ways to know that transcend our typical means of learning. I've come across 4 primary arguments to which non-believers point when doubting God's existence. The first is evolution, that we happened by chance, not divine creation. Second is all the pain and suffering in the world. How could an all-powerful God allow that to happen? The third is linked to the second. Not only is there a great deal of pain and suffering in the world, but much of it has been caused by organized religion or extremist believers in God. Note the Crusades, the Inquisition, many wars and conflicts around the world, and even current terrorist causes. In other words, if God exists, why is there so much suffering in His name? And why do sincere believers suffer as well? And finally, there are those who don't believe it's possible that a single being could create life, the world, our solar system, the universe. Now, how could that be? It's beyond comprehension. Let's take a look at each of these arguments, starting with evolution. When you read the latest research on evolution, you notice that there is a lot of debate and many unanswered questions amongst experts in the field about how evolution might have worked. There are arguments as to whether humankind evolved from lesser or greater apes, or not from apes at all, that they are a sister species, that we all come from what is called a last universal common ancestor. You'll hear about the missing link and differences in opinion as to whether that missing link has actually been uncovered. You'll read about theories on the evolution of the human eye, something Darwin himself said it was absurd to propose that it evolved through spontaneous mutation and natural selection. You'll find that there is much that hasn't been answered and over which there is still great debate. It's fascinating to read, but when it comes to knowing whether there's a God, all of those arguments miss the point. There are respected scientists who believe in evolution and still maintain a strong belief in deity. Many believe that evolution was God's tool to create humankind. Charles Darwin himself, the father of modern evolution, stated, quote, "There is grandeur in this view of life, with its several powers, having been originally breathed by the Creator into a few forms or into one, and that from so simple a beginning, endless forms most beautiful and most wonderful have been and are being evolved." End quote. He is saying that God may have started the process of evolution, and that it is still wondrously unfolding. Another revealing insight from Darwin, quote, "To those who fully admit the immortality of the human soul, the destruction of our world will not appear so dreadful," end quote. Interesting words from one who, as the father of evolution, people think must have been an atheist, as he references a creator and the immortality of our human soul. In this series focused on finding God, I'm not going to get into the extent or degree of how much evolution or creation was involved in the formation of our world, its plant life, animals, and our own existence. Even for pure creationists, opinions are all over the board as to whether the 6 days of creation mentioned in the Bible are 6 actual days, 6,000, 6 million, billion, or 6 indeterminate periods of time. As members of the church who believe in modern-day prophets and revelation, we know that it hasn't been revealed yet. And that's probably part of testing our faith, one of the reasons we know that we're here on this earth, and because understanding it isn't critical to our salvation. We do have the assurance that we'll understand all of this someday as we continue to seek after the source of creation. Science will continue to literally unearth evidence that some claim proves that we evolved, but evolution to any degree doesn't disprove the existence of God. As I said, some believe that God instigated evolution. There is a great deal of evidence of evolution that we can't or shouldn't ignore, but that doesn't prove that humankind evolved from apes or from a universal common ancestor. My own belief, for what it's worth, is a blend of both creationism and evolution, that God placed certain plants and animals on this earth, then guided the process of evolution to create additional plant life and animals. We, as his children, didn't evolve, but were then placed on this earth by a loving God as part of a great plan for our eternal happiness, growth, and progression. Getting back to the point of this section, which is listing arguments against God's existence, it's important to note that any proof of evolution simply does not disprove the existence of a God, as long as it's possible that God guided or instigated that very process. Again, I'm not saying he did, but as long as it's a possibility, the evidence against falls short. The second argument against God's existence points to the abundance of pain and suffering in the world. This argument could and does fill volumes, but it really reflects more on our own lack of understanding than as to whether God exists. If we're open to the possibility that God allows suffering as part of a larger plan, however unpleasant or gut-wrenching that might be, it still doesn't disprove his existence. Understanding the role of agency in God's eternal plan, which is the freedom to choose to act as we'd like, explains a lot. How we sometimes use our agency to cause pain and suffering in the world, sometimes even in the name of God, demonstrates some of humankind's greatest follies, but still does not disprove a higher being. If we understand, as the Savior taught, that we are here to develop Christ-like, ultimately God-like traits, including compassion, faith, courage, forgiveness, determination, long-suffering, patience, charity, and love, among others, we can catch a glimpse of the necessity of facing extremely difficult trials in this life, just as he did. Author Richard Bach put it this way, quote, "The mark of your ignorance is the depth of your belief in injustice and tragedy. What the caterpillar calls the end of the world, the master calls a butterfly," end quote. Think about it another way. If what we are about is discovering a higher source of energy, intelligence, goodness, and creation, then we must acknowledge that this being, if it exists, knows a lot more than we do. If there is a plan that includes going through, sometimes suffering through, this mortal experience for our eternal progression, we might not understand it completely. It might even anger us. But again, it does not disprove the existence of that higher being. In fact, there have been countless individuals who have suffered greatly, in which their suffering has actually brought them closer to knowing God than before. One of the best examples I've found of our lack of understanding human suffering while acknowledging a higher being was provided by Dr. Truman Manson in his essay, Human Anguish and Divine Love. I quote him here. "Imagine for a moment what it might be like to have a close, intimate friend who has sworn to stand by you and protect you and maybe even die for you. Suppose he is a native of a foreign country and has never heard of modern surgery. If you were ushered into a room where you were undergoing an appendectomy, saw the doctors and nurses cutting away, and the evidences of blood and pain, he would likely jump to three conclusions. One, that these persons were trying to torture you, perhaps take your life. Two, that all this was against your will. Three, that the highest service he could render you would be to pull them away." Brother Madsen continues, "But you see, he would not only be mistaken, his assumptions would in fact be the exact opposite of the truth. These highly trained persons are intent on helping you. Truly, they could spare you the pain of the operation, but only at the cost of your life. It is at your request and your willingness, even the anxiety to go through with it, however you might shrink, led you to sign a statement justifying any medical action they deemed proper while you were still incapable of further instructions. You might even have cautioned them, "Don't pay any attention to my groans, do what you have to do." And third, the worst thing he would do would be to prevent or even to interrupt their carrying out their task. End quote. We don't fully understand human suffering in the context of the eternities, but the fact that suffering exists does not prove that God doesn't. And this is where truth is clarified by modern-day prophets as to where we've come from, why we're here, and where we're going can shed tremendous light. Part of Dr. Madsen's surgery example addresses our agreement in the premortal life to undergo suffering in this life to grow and become more Christ-like. Knowledge of such gospel truths becomes more abundant and clear once we have a foundation of knowing there is a God and understanding our relationship to Him. That's one of the reasons your quest is so important. Now, I want to be very clear that I don't treat this argument lightly. There are those who suffer profoundly as a result of war, torture, severe prolonged illnesses, abuse, starvation, natural disasters, and more. For some, it's more subtle, like loneliness, abandonment, fear, or anxiety. This suffering is real, and it's heartbreaking. I remember seeing an interview with a famous entertainer who talked about the death of his angelic mother, who, as I recall, suffered for years from cancer. He said that he couldn't believe in a God who would allow such a wonderful, sweet woman to die so painfully. His comment reflects that of many who have been so painfully impacted, and is something that should spark deep compassion in all of us. It should drive us to more awareness, greater service, and support of each other, not in judgment or distancing ourselves. This is not an easy issue we're exploring, and there are simply things we don't fully understand. Yet our lack of understanding of why these things happen does not disprove God's existence or the possibility of an eternal plan for our growth and ultimate salvation. It might make our belief in God challenging at times, but it does not act as final proof to the contrary. I personally have felt strength, inspiration, and peace from on high at times of suffering, as many have, and testify that God can actually help us through those moments. The same is true for the third argument against God's existence, how humankind has misused religion over the centuries and caused suffering in the name of God. God revealed organized religion, more on that later, but then left us free as to how we use that gift. There are those who have severely abused it, but countless individuals have used the tools of organized religion to do much good in the world. It is our choice as to how we use the things God has given us, for good or ill, or even to choose whether to believe that religion was revealed by God. It still doesn't prove or disprove His existence. These are instead matters of faith and agency. Finally, the question of whether such a powerful being could exist, a being that created galaxies, our world, plants, animals, and us, once again has more to do with our lack of understanding than with proof that it couldn't be. If any of us could appear to ancient or less developed civilizations, we could, with knowledge and modern tools we take for granted, appear to them to be gods. Think of how television, microwave ovens, space rockets and shuttles, cell phones, computers, x-rays, nuclear weapons, all human inventions would be perceived by a less advanced society. If we are humble enough to acknowledge that in spite of our remarkable advances, we might also still have a great deal to learn, we leave open the possibility that someone, someone with a capital S, understands more than we about using the laws and powers of the universe. Elder Richard G. Scott put it this way, quote, "Electricity moving through a large metal object, let's say a crane, is, in its crudest interpretation, not much different than the powerful Spirit of God moving through the elements of earth as it may have been in the creation. It's funny how we deny God on one hand today and then, with our greatly limited knowledge, duplicate in our own small way the same miracles that we claim would be impossible for him to do. End quote. As we gaze into the vastness of the universe, there's a tremendous difference between saying, "No way any being could have created all of this," versus, "I can't comprehend how a being could have created all of this." Because someday we will. Elder Neil A. Maxwell once said, "We should not assume that just because something is unexplainable by us, it is unexplainable." Those are the most basic arguments people use to disprove God's existence. There's a fifth one we'll sometimes hear. It comes from those who don't want to believe in God because they don't want to keep specific commandments that he has given us. The "I don't want to know because I want to live as I want to live" approach. And that certainly doesn't disprove his existence. Later we'll talk about how commandments come from a perfect, loving Father who truly wants the best for us. That's a matter of faith. Again, though all of these claims can at times cause us to wonder, they do not prove that God doesn't exist. There is, however, compelling evidence that there is a God. This I have divided into four primary areas for your consideration. 1. Intelligent design. 2. The law of nature. 3. Witnesses. And 4. Impact. We'll begin to explore the first, intelligent design, or order in the universe, in our next episode. Thanks for listening.